time where fake news, online bots, and foreign meddling are genuine concerns for the American public, conversations about the health of our democracy feel real and important. The first edition of A Documentary History of the United States was published in 1952, highlighting the essential documents, speeches, and letters that ultimately shaped American history. Now, A Documentary History has been updated for a 10th time, with a new chapter that includes, you guessed it, tweets and Facebook posts alongside notable speeches and statements. With us today is Alexander Heffner, the co-author of this book and host of The Open Mind on PBS. His new chapter in this edition, Populists' Revolt, Democracy Under Duress, challenges us to look at changes in American politics in the digital era. Hi, Alexander. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amy. A pleasure to be with you.
I am really happy to have you here. So here's your 10th edition of the book, and you write a final chapter that uses very different types of primary sources to show what American democracy in the modern era looks like. So tell us what separates this chapter from the others.
I think one of the things that separates it is we have technology now being exploited for malicious purposes, and we were talking about this just a second ago. It's this noxious fusion of the hyper-partisan climate and the absence of context and the absence of a thoroughness and a commitment to the greater good. And I know that's what you pride yourself on here and we do on public media. But these social media, they're really anti-social media in the way that they disseminate information, which is often dis or misinformation, and they degrade our core democratic fiber. So in this 10th edition, we include Zuckerberg's Facebook posts, which we're owning up to the fact that, yes, Facebook played a role in furthering, spreading the fake news. And in the same breath, we include Donald Trump's tweets, regrettably, because they speak to both the message, the vitriol, the vindictiveness, the viciousness of this political moment. And they also speak to the medium, the newness, the novelty of Twitter as that modern day bully pulpit.
But wasn't that the goal of technology? Isn't that the really at its core, the fact that technology can bring people closer to the actual quote unquote truth? In other words, you don't need anyone to filter things for you anymore. You can go directly to the source, the original. Now you can get PDFs easily. You don't have to go down to a library or an archive. You can live stream rallies or speeches. You don't have to wait for the news media to give it to you. So why technology then? You're calling it sort of this noxious fume, but at its best, can't it actually help make democracy better?
That was the aspiration. But we're looking at in real time the consequence of that aspiration, the digitization, the democratization of our body politic. You would think that common spaces, a virtual public square like Twitter or Facebook, could be – the output of that could be pro-social growth, consensus, building bridges. But the leadership of those websites, especially during the 16 campaign and the run-up to it, abdicated all responsibility. And they said, we're not journalists. We're merely moderators. And sometimes we're not even moderators. So the end game of this democratization has been electing demagogues, not just here in this country, but around the world.
So really democratize the process because it's literally going directly to people versus somebody, you know, having some sort of leadership role in making it work.
Right. I think you elect demagogues when you amuse yourself to death, to cite Neil Postman, may he rest in peace. The idea of democracy is that we have to be informed citizens. So we see examples in this 10th edition of A Documentary History of the United States of those speeches that are restoring or still committed to integrity in discourse. And you know, in that sense, Jeff Flake and Bernie Sanders' speeches, which are much more in the traditional mold of political oratory, are committed to those values of being honest, of being forthright, and of also, I think Flake more than Sanders, committing yourself to a complicated idea of America, that it is not just greatness in and of itself, that we have to look at the means and the end. And in this case, even for conservatives who were on the never Trump bandwagon, they, I think, are wrestling every day with this idea that to what end are we putting jurists on the bench if Donald Trump's authoritarian impulse is bleeding onto judges? It's, what difference is it then in a Pinochet regime when you handpick judges and say, yes, that's my jurist. My jurist is going to be very good for me. So we live in a hugely difficult time to reconcile these democratic values.
But haven't we always lived in these really difficult times? America's been polarized for most of our history, just at times,
for sure.
More, more than others. So what makes this different, especially thinking back into this book and all of the documents that you've gone through, what makes this time different or maybe not so different from where we've been before?
I think it is very different. And I'll give you one example that I think you'll appreciate. Could you imagine Mike Pence at this juncture giving a speech like Gerald Ford did in his inaugural address amid that tumult, that turbulent time for our democracy, and saying it's the truth that binds us as a civilization and a government? I couldn't envision that. I feel like he's sold himself to Trumpism, and Trump in turn has sold himself to the extremist of the extreme orthodoxy, that we live in a different moment where we elected someone who has 30% of faithful followers, and 60 to 70% are not represented. And we live in this minoritarian culture where it was not just the Electoral College, but now through gerrymandering, these institutions are rigged against the voter. So I think there are differences institutionally in the way that we vote, in the way that we govern, that are noteworthy.
But it's not just people on the right that are using technology. People on the left, you talked about Bernie Sanders in your book, and you compare and contrast both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump as populists who use technology to promote themselves. We've seen this most recently in congressional elections where folks are able to harness the power of the internet to talk directly to people. Is it different somehow for Bernie Sanders being able to use the power of technology than it is for somebody like Donald Trump? They're both promoting a populist, right, power to the people agenda.
It's true. I think the fact that we indicate, and Daniel Dale does this at the Toronto Star, the extent to which this president lies on social media makes it different from Bernie Sanders' use. I mean, it's just a difference in terms of whether or not we can rely on our commander-in-chief to be factual. And so from that perspective, I think that Bernie Sanders was not fact-checked ad nauseum in the same way Donald Trump has really committed himself to unearthing these conspiracy theories and exploiting them for the betterment of his narrow political ideological agenda. So in that respect, I think it's different. And the Republicans have capitalized on Trump's cult-like persona online. And Bernie Sanders, while he won millions of votes during the primaries and caucus season, in the end of the day, you know, he just couldn't capitalize on his personality. And I think you need a more expansive definition of what your constituency is in 2020.
Alexander Heffner is the host of Open Mind on PBS. He's also a campus speaker and journalist and co-author of the updated A Documentary History of the United States. Alexander, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Amy.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.